Hi, I'm Ahwan and this is I Revise, the medical revision podcast that's easy to listen to. Today I'm joined with Dr. Ashish Vasudev.
Hi, I'm Ash. I'm a junior doctor with an interest in ENT. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing epistaxis, more commonly known as nosebleeds.
So Ash, why is epistaxis so important?
Well, nosebleeds are common occurrences. It can present at any age, but is more so seen in kids under 10 and adults over 50. And whilst the majority of nosebleeds don't actually pose much of a threat, prolonged bleeds that don't stop spontaneously or with conservative measures can be life-threatening. In severe cases with vast amounts of blood loss, this can lead to hypovolemia, and that can even lead to shock. It is also important to note that blood may run down the back of the throat, causing airway compromise through aspiration of blood and clots. Therefore, early recognition and correct management are essential to managing this emergency.
Ash, in ENT, anatomy is really important. So what anatomy do we need to know in regards to epistaxis?
So you can't discuss epistaxis without discussing Little's area. Well, around 90% of nosebleeds occur in Little's area. And this is also known as the Kesselbach's plexus. This is an area on the anterior inferior portion of the nasal septum. It's where five blood vessels anastomose to supply the septum. These vessels include the anterior ethmoidal artery, a branch of the ophthalmic, the posterior ethmoidal artery, another branch of the ophthalmic, the sphenopalatine artery, a branch of the maxillary, the greater palatine artery, a branch of the maxillary, and the superior labial artery, a branch of the facial artery. And all of these arteries actually originate from the internal and external carotid arteries. And you should always check this area for a bleeding source. This can be done by using a Thudicum nasal speculum and a light source. Ideally, you will want to use a head torch as you're able to then keep your other hand free in case you need to action the bleed that you can see.
So tell us about the etiology or some of the causes behind epistaxis.
So it's actually quite often seen to be idiopathic, but you do need to check for the common causes. And the most common cause by far is trauma. This may be through picking your nose or inserting foreign bodies, and these are mostly seen in children, but it could be things like blunt trauma as well, like a punch to the nose or a fall flat on your face. But it's also important to ask about recent nasal surgery. Other causes could be things like upper respiratory tract infections, inflammation, rhinitis. Make sure to ask about hypertension and check their blood pressure whilst you're there. And then it could be something like coagulopathies. So you ask about their family history, and they may have thrombocytopenias, von Willebrand's disease, or haemophilias. And then some of the iatrogenic causes as well. So this is namely through anticoagulants like warfarin or heparin, and also the use of nasal steroids for a long period of time.
Ash, when someone rocks up with nosebleeds, what are some of the red flag symptoms for epistaxis that we should be watching out for?
So as mentioned earlier with the causes, so things you need to watch out for are things like if they're on any anticoagulations, if they got any thrombocytopenia, recent nasal surgery, or if they've had any radiotherapy to the nose. And also if they have a lot of bleeding despite packing in the nose. And packing is something that we'll come on to a bit later when we talk about the treatments for epistaxis.
Ash, is there any way that we can categorise epistaxis?
So yes, you can categorise epistaxis into anterior and posterior bleeds. So the first question you should always ask your patients is, did the blood run down the back of the throat first or out of the nose first? In anterior bleeds, blood runs out of the nose first. these types of bleeds are more common in younger patients and they're usually due to trauma or foreign bodies.
Okay, that's really interesting. So how about posterior bleeds?
Well, in posterior bleeds, blood runs down the throat first and can be seen in the back of the mouth. This is more troublesome because it increases the risk of aspiration of blood, which can lead to obstruction of the airway. These types of bleeds are seen more commonly in older patients and associated with hypertension. These are more problematic as it's difficult to identify the bleeding point and of its increased airway risks. So you may want to involve the ENT team early at this point. So there are some other symptoms that may be associated with the posterior bleeds as well. Your patient will obviously present with the bleeding from the nose, but may also present with other symptoms such as hematemesis due to swallowing of the blood and vomiting it back up. Similarly, they may also present with melena some hours later, and this is also for the same reason, they swallow the blood and this can actually lead to a bit of diarrhea later as well.
Ash, if I had a patient in front of me with epistaxis, how would I manage them?
So manage your patient immediately with an A2E assessment and resuscitation. Ideally, you want to get in a large bore cannula in place early in case things get out of control. Send off bloods, including FBCs, clotting, group and save, and get a blood gas. Next, you want to implement the conservative measures. So get the patient to pinch the fleshy part of their nose, sit up and tilt their head forward for around 20 minutes or so. And ideally, you want them to place some ice packs on their forehead or find an ice cube for them to suck on.
So we've tried conservative management, but it's still not working. The bleeding's still continuing. So what would we do next, Ash?
You would then consider using something like IV tranexamic acid to help with clotting if this seems so severe. You can then consider use of vasoconstrictors for your patient. You can try and spray some local anaesthetic and a vasoconstrictor targeting Little's area. So continue to pinch the nose for a few minutes after you've sprayed the area. Use something like cofenalicane, which contains a mix of lidocaine and phenylephrine. And if you can successfully identify the bleeding site in the nostril, consider silver nitrate cautery. These are essentially sticks with silver nitrate tips which will chemically burn the bleeding site. And if the patient is stable after an hour once the bleeding has stopped, you can safety net them and they can go home with a bit of Naseptin cream. But just beware to ask the patient if they have a peanut allergy, as it is made with peanut oils, and you can use Vaseline as an alternative.
You mentioned nasal packing earlier, Ash. Could you tell us a bit about nasal packing?
Sure. And nasal packing is then the next step as well. So essentially, these nasal packs are like long, thin tampons which can go inside the nose. And you sometimes, if you dip them in agents such as tranexamic acid, adrenaline, or even water, they'll then expand and then provide pressure against these bleeding points. So you can use something like a Meracel, a Nasopore, or even a Rapid Rhino. Nasopores are absorbable, and Rapid Rhinos tend to be used in the case of an emergency or for big bleed that just won't stop. You should also consider packing both sides for the added pressure if the bleeding is still not controlled.
And once the bleeding stopped, what advice should we be giving the patients?
So for the next 24 hours, the patient should avoid blowing their nose or picking their nose. Tell them not to lift anything heavy and avoid all strenuous activities and hot drinks. Essentially, you can provide them a leaflet on this. You'll usually find one in A&E.
And how do we manage those patients that get recurrent nosebleeds?
It goes back to our causes again, so you might want to look at their blood pressure and make sure that they're having regular checks and are on the right medication for that. Make sure that we're reversing the fact that they have low platelets and giving them a transfusion if required. We need to make sure that their warfarin is dosed properly and we're monitoring it closely. If all of those things are fine, then it may be that they need definitive management. And this could be through either an arterial ligation or embolization, which they may need to go to theatre for.
Ash, what are the key points or the take-home messages?
So what I would say are the main take-home points are to control the bleeding early and prepare for the worst. Get access and get your bloods. Establish if this is an anterior or posterior bleed, and then start with your stepwise approach of conservative measures, vasoconstriction, cautery and packing. Beware when using Naseptin cream afterwards if the patient has a peanut allergy. Look for the reversible causes, and then for any uncontrollable bleeds, the patient may need to go to theatre for an artery ligation or embolization.
Here we are again at the test yourself portion of the episode. We're going to be asking you 5 questions based on the content we've just covered in the episode. Don't stress if you don't get them right. Just go back and listen to the episode again. So if you're ready, let's do this.
Question 1. What are the 5 vessels that supply Little's area? Question 2. What are the common causes of epistaxis? Question 3. Which types of bleeds are more life-threatening? Question 4. Can you name any red flag symptoms of epistaxis? Question 5. After conservative measures, what are your management options?
Good job for getting through all those questions. Don't worry if you weren't able to answer them. You can always go back and listen to the episode again. Now let's go through the answers.
Question 1. What are the 5 vessels that supply Little's area?
1. The anterior ethmoidal artery. 2. The posterior ethmoidal artery. 3. The sphenopalatine artery. 4. The greater palatine artery. 5. The superior labial artery.
Question 2. What are the common causes of epistaxis?
The common causes of epistaxis are trauma, hypertension, coagulopathies, and medications.
Question 3. Which types of bleeds are more life-threatening?
Bleeds that are more life-threatening are posterior bleeds.
Question 4. Can you name any red flag symptoms of epistaxis?
Some red flag symptoms of epistaxis include anticoagulant use, thrombocytopenia, recent nasal surgery, and radiotherapy to the nose.
Question 5. After conservative measures, what are your management options?
After conservative measures, your management options for epistaxis are to use tranexamic acid infusion, vasoconstrictor sprays in the nose, nasal cautery with silver nitrate, and nasal packing.
You've been listening to Dr. Ahwan Qureshi and Dr. Ashish Vasudev.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of I Revise. I hope that you found it helpful and interesting. If you enjoyed this week's episode, then tell your friends.
Join us in next week's episode where we'll be covering another core medical topic.
And don't forget to share and subscribe. See you next time.